Life Unreal 3.
Wing Commander Wells came up to me and said, John, I hear you've got some fire bombs. I said, yes, they've just been issued to me. And he said, I want those for tonight. I said, oh yes, why? He said, well, I'm going over Berlin. He said, I'd like to give them a present. I said, well, I'm sorry, you can't have them. I said, they're not for aircraft. I said, they're for us to light up and set fire to all the waste ground in front of our positions and anybody else that happens to be in them. He said, I want those fire bombs. I said, I'm sorry, I cannot give them to you. He said, well, I'm going to requisition them. I said, well, look, I said, just take into the account, you've got your Wimpy, you go up to 18,000, 20,000. I said, you come and have a look at these bombs. And so I undid them and showed him the glass and everything. And I said, now look, you think of the thinness of that glass and the pressure up in the air in that aircraft. I said, it's a hell of a hazard. He said, yes, I think you're right, John. Thank you very much. And that was that. But, so anyway, that was that. And from there, after 3 months, Colonel Berge asked for me to be retained, but my battalion commander wouldn't play ball, and so I had to go back, and I was relieved by Second Lieutenant Michael Naylor, who was with me in France. And I went back to my platoon in Kessingland, where we were on aerodrome defense. And not aerodrome defense, I'm sorry, sure, beach defenses. And that was that. I stayed there, and then we moved down to Beds and Hearts. I'm so sorry. We went to, Beds and Hearts, we went moved down to Henley-on-Thames, became part of the 3rd British Div. And
this is the whole battalion?
This is the whole battalion, yes. 2nd 6th Battalion, where we went for training and became part of the fire force for the 3rd British Div. And we were inspected by King George the 6th. Lined up and inspected. And in the meantime, we were training in Bedford. And that was where I heard about the fact that I'd been awarded the medal. It so happened I was in the pub at the time, and someone came up, it was Christmas, and someone came up to me and said, you are John Redfern? I said, yes. And he said, well, your name's in the paper tonight. I said, oh, yes. And they said, yes, and congratulations. I said, what do you mean, congratulations? He said, well, apparently you've been awarded the MC. I said, oh, good God, surely not. And they said, well, you are. And I had a look, and it was true, yes.
This is for your work in France?
Yes, that's correct. And then I also apparently was awarded the MID as well for that particular thing. But anyway, we then went on to Bedford, and Bedford for training, battalion training. And I had an unfortunate occurrence there. I had to, on one Sunday, I was told to take my platoon out for a gas training scheme. So I collected my gas bombs and everything and started to took them out, and I went outside Bedford to a fairly quiet place and let off my gas bombs and started the gas training with exercises and things. Unfortunately, in the middle of it all, the wind changed and it all blew onto a village that was sort of not very far away. And all the housewives came out at me and said, you're ruining my husband's dinner. I can't get dinner. I can't use my kitchens. I can't do this. And we're going to report you to your commanding officer. I said, well, madam, that's your privilege, not mine. And I'm very sorry. I apologize. Anyway, I doused the gas and everything as much as I could. And gathered my troops up and we went back. And in the process, I put a dud one into my pocket. And later on, sun snowing and everything, and I had a bloke, I shared a room with another officer as fire was going. For some unknown reason, I threw this damn thing on a fire. I went out and left him. When I came back, I found his head out of the window saying, you so-and-so, come into this room at once. And I went to the officer's mess where his room was. I couldn't, it was dreadful. It was full of gas and everything. And anyway, I got this thing off and threw it out and we managed it. But it being a weekend, there was no one there. But I knew I was in trouble the minute anybody came back. The CO came back. And it was... no one said a damn dicky bird to me. No one at all. Then another officer came up to me and said, John, you're posted. I said, oh, yes. He said, yes. He said, you look under the adjutant's blotter in his office. He said, you'll find three names there. You're one of them. I said, oh. I said, all right, fair enough. Anyway, when the adjutant wasn't there, when he was having his lunch or anything, I popped in and there were three names. And mine and two other gentlemen who, and we were posted, I was posted out to India, the other one was posted to the commandos, and another one posted to the paratroops. And that's how I left the 2nd 6th Battalion, the East Surrey Regiment, and went out to India, which again was a story in itself, because I was posted out with 250 other officers. And to the Indian Army. And we went up to Glasgow and we went on board the P-16, which was the Strathaird, as far as I was concerned, a P&O boat, one of the boats that I used to deal with when I was in civilian life. And it had been turned into a troop ship. And I went into my berth and I reported to the CO of the boat. And he said, ah, he said, Lieutenant Redfern. I said, yes. He said, good. He said, you're in charge of a draft. I said, why me? I said, you've got 250 officers here. Why pick on me? He said, because I think that you are the right person for the job. I said, oh. He said, yes. He said, you've got 32 men to look after. And he said, I've given you a warrant officer, class one, an Australian warrant officer from Australia House who's going back on retirement. I said, that's fine. He said, we'll go down to your deck and meet him, which I did do. Marvellous bloke, lovely bloke. We knew we were going to get on together. Anyway, the blokes, these 32 blokes turned up, we allocated them, so on and so forth, and the WO2 said, well, you go back and get your berth and everything ready, sir, and I'll look after these blokes for you for the moment. And he said, I said, all right, I'll come back in about 2 or 3 hours' time. He said, fine. I went back, and he said, you know who these blokes are? I said, no. I said, I haven't a clue. He said, they've been taken from all the prisons in Glasgow and conscripted into the army with the proviso that they had to either go abroad or go to prison in England. And they volunteered to come abroad. I said, Christ almighty. I wonder what's going to happen now. He said, well, he said, we'll have to wait and see. Anyway, we berthed them on and gave them a bit of a talking to and so on and so forth. And the following morning, the captain of the ship wanted to see me. He said, Lieutenant Redfern, I said, yes. He said, you have a draft on board consisting of criminals. I said, no, I said, I wouldn't call them criminals. I said, they're in the army now, they're all right. He said, they're not all right. He said, they broke into the ship's canteen last night and did a lot of damage and stole a lot of things. I said, all right, I'll deal with it. And I went back to them and said, look, this has got to stop. I don't know what you want or what you don't want. But I said it won't occur again, or shouldn't occur again. And they promised faithfully it wouldn't. And the following night, the same thing happened, except it wasn't the ship's canteen, it was a nappy canteen. So I got hold of the purser and said, look, have you got a gramophone or something? He said, yes. And I said, what, have you got any records? He said, yes. Can I borrow them? He said, yes. And so every evening from then on, I used to play them and debate and keep them occupied. And it paid dividend. I didn't have another break-in from that day to the time I arrived in India. We used to win the ship's captain's cake every Friday. And when we got to Durban, out of the 32, I got 31 re-embarking back.
How did they win the cake? What did they have to
for
do?
For the best kept deck, mess deck, over the whole period. And their bunks and berths and everything. And cleanliness and tidiness and all that sort of thing. And I lost one in Durban. But when we got back to the ship, after it was deloused and steamed out, the ship's captain said to me, he said, I'm very sorry. He said, you can't enter for the ship's week's thing, for the weekly close. He said, you won it every week last time, and the other people are getting fed up. I said, okay, we understand that. And... but it didn't make any odds. We still kept to the same standard. And we arrived... on the way through, we saw the Queen Mary coming from the Indian Ocean to Egypt. Full steed ahead, 32 knots, smoke belching. It was a marvellous sight. Well, unescorted. And... The wave bow was going, well, it's terrific. Anyway, we got to India, and then I took this draft to the Armoured Corps in central India, where I was supposed to deliver it. And there was a complete and utter silence about the whole place. So I went to the guard room, saw the guard, so he said, "Oh," he said, "the Prince of Wales is here." He said, "Well," I said, "I got 31 blokes here which I want a signature for." He said, "All right," he said, I'll have them." Yeah. So from there I went up to the Royal Military Academy and met all my blokes again there. And there was a hell of a row going on. I said, "What's wrong?" I was only a lieutenant. And they were captains and majors and people. And they said, "Oh, we're getting no mail down. We're getting bad food. We're getting this." So I said, "Well, what are you doing about it?" And they said, "Well, we're complaining bitterly." I said, "Well, okay, fair enough." Anyway, I didn't pay much attention. I didn't bother very much, actually. I just obeyed the rules, except that we were lined up and there was a Sikh captain, bit of a so-and-so, and he lined up us all up and he said, "You are the cream of the shit of the British Army. Anyone wish to volunteer for the Indian Navy?" So I think two or three forward. They had no idea of warfare then. I mean, the Burma campaign had not started, the Japs hadn't started attacking them, and therefore they were just purely peace officers and nothing else.
What did he mean by saying that to them?
Well, in other words, we were first class officers, but unwanted by the British Army, and they'd sent us out to the Indian Army.
Where was this?
This was in at the IMA in Dehradun, in India, when we would join them. Anyway, I was. We'd been there. We were on a 6-week conversion course, as they called it. And after a fortnight, I was sent for by the captain in charge of this particular section, who was an Indian Army regular. And he said, "I'm not satisfied with the bloke that's looking after your section." He said, "You've got to take it over." I thought, "What again? Another one?" And he said, I want no excuses." He said, "You are in charge." So, okay, I said, fair enough. And we managed to get our mail sorted out, and we managed to get the food hygienically looked at and prepared and all that sort of thing. And things did alter, I must admit, and became better. And we did our 6 weeks course, and then we were asked what regiments we wanted to go to. And as we had three Gurkha regiments at Dehradun, the 2nd, the 3rd, and the 9th, I put down the 2nd, 9th, and 3rd. And I got posted to the 9th in Dehradun.
Which battalion of the 9th Gurkhas?
It was the training center. And there it was a question of 1,500 or more being trained. They used to, and then it speeded up later to about 3,000 odd people training, and eventually became a battalion training officer and CO Colonel Duncan. He was still a lieutenant colonel. They wouldn't give you the rank for the job in those days. And I used to shoot up and down between major and captain, captain and major. And but it was very interesting because I had one battalion that I used to have to train for jungle warfare, and one battalion that I used to have to train for desert warfare. And it was fantastic. We used to have all these recruits coming down from the Nepal by train to Dehradun, and used to go and meet them. And of course, recruiting depots in Nepal, they all used to be issued with a kit of sorts, which included towels, shorts, stockings, boots. And they always used to arrive with their towels around their heads, used as turbans, and their boots around their necks. And it was marvelous to see them. And then they used to be paired off, and they had to work in pairs from then on. If one wanted to go to the lavatory, the other one went too. And this was purely as a precaution for jungle warfare. They never used to have to go out singly, they used to go out in pairs. And whoever your pair was, the other bloke went to. And it was fantastic. And
what kind of soldiers did they make?
Excellent. But you still had the lower caste of they were in the Hindus. They have castes from high to low, and we had the two high castes, the martial class. But we also did recruit from a local cantonment. And occasionally, well, not occasionally, but quite often, they weren't used to the discipline and hardness of the Gurkhas from Nepal, and they go into the woods and take their own lives. And quite frequently in the morning, you'd be told one be found hanging here, and another one hanging there, and so on. So it's very unfortunate, but it used to happen.
Because they were unsuitable material?
Not that they were unsuitable. They got depressed being away from their families and homes and from their everyday life. That was all something entirely strange and different from. Whereas the martial classes, they were more or less used to it. But it was unfortunate, but it used to happen.
So and they were from the cantonment in Dehradun?
No, they used to be from the from a local division of India, the Bihars or whatever, and round Dehradun area there were different. Sort of counties, if you like, and they used to come, but they used to slacken on to Nepal, and it was sort of the lower class people. From they weren't, I suppose they were Indian rather than full Gurkhas. But anyway, from there, we had people from the desert who used to come up, officers, Colonel Roach and one or two others who used to come down and visit us. They used to come out from what they were doing in the desert and come down and visit us and see how we were training and how we were and so on and so forth. Oh, and I also one day got told I was on leave. I was given leave. And while I was on leave in central India, I had a telegram saying, when I go back, report back to the depot, which I did do. And the adjutant said, you've got to go down to 177 Indian Independent Infantry Brigade, HQ, at in central India. And I said, well, what have I got to do down there? He said, you've got to go and umpire an exercise or something. I said, call me back for that. Yes. Oh, yes. And so I went down there and was met by the quartermaster and went out to their camp. Absolutely empty. I said, well, where are we going? He said, oh, he said, you'll be going to the jungle in the morning. I said, oh, yes, and who do I go and see there? He said, you go and see Brigadier Wingate. I said, oh, yes. I said, well, what do they do? He said, oh, you'll find out. And I was taken by the quartermaster to the jungle, to Brigade HQ, met the brigade major, who was a Scot. And then I looked round and saw all the, it was piping hot, all the marquees and things with their sides down. I said, don't you allow any air through them? He said, no. He said, the brigadier won't allow it because of malaria, mosquitoes. I said, oh, so that's unfortunate. He said, yes. Anyway, he said, you'll be meeting the brigadier. I said, well, I actually have seen him once. I met him in Colchester in 1939 when he was come back from Abyssinia and was had been lecturing all round. I assume saw him at Colchester.
This is Wingate.
Yes.
And so had you made of him then?
Peculiar bloke. And, well, he was another Montgomery to a very great degree. No smoking, no... Very, very eccentric. Anyway, he came out from his tent wearing this old Woolsey hat, or helmet, the old Woolsey helmet that we were all issued with and threw away on the way to India. And I was introduced to him, and how do you do, and so on and so forth, and I told him heard him lecturing in Colchester. And I had lunch with him. I had to sit on his left. And as I was seating there, he scrambled in his pockets. Have one of those. He said, they're spring onions. And I looked at them. They were shriveled to heck, dry as hell. The stalks were white. And I said, no, I don't think so. Thank you very much, sir. He said, you don't eat them. I said, no, I don't eat them. Thank you very much. So he tore the thing to pieces and put one in his mouth. And we talked for a bit. And he said, right, he said, after lunch, he said, I want you to go out with the intelligence officer and get some food for the mess. I said, oh. I said, what do we get? He said, anything you find. I said, oh, well, okay. Anyway, the intelligence officer came along. I can't remember who he was, but he came along. He had a rifle. I said, do I get one? He said, nope. I said, he said, you carry the rope. I said, oh, Christ. All right. Anyway, we marched off. We didn't see a thing anywhere. And suddenly, at about 5 o'clock in the evening, I said to him, what's that in front there? And he looked and he said, keep absolutely still. He said, that's a black...